Hey guys, what is up? We are headed into week four and we're going to kick things off by explaining why the result we got from the Pittsburgh Steelers on Monday night is not remotely surprising. Then we'll get into the news with Jenny and Connor. And as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome back in. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. Week three is in the books. We're looking forward to week four. And I want to kick things off here by looking back at the most recent developments of week three. That was on Monday night. And we'll get to the Buccaneers in a minute. But I want to start with where the Steelers are at and who the Steelers are and why what you saw on Monday night should not be a surprise at all. And what we saw was a team that came out and looked prepared, that looked locked in, that built a 30-10 halftime lead, and a team that beat back a rally from the Buccaneers there at the end. Ryan Fitzpatrick coming on at the end of that game, and they were able to load up behind James Conner and really pound the Bucs into submission at the end of that game. And we saw the identity of the Steelers come to life. And I don't think it's about anything on the field. I think it's about the way that they've handled everything the last 3 weeks. They're capable and their infrastructure is built to deal with these sorts of things. And that's what everybody's been missing as we've been talking about Le'Veon Bell and his absence. And we've been talking about Antonio Brown and the bleep storm that his tweet caused last week. This is who the Steelers are. This is who the Steelers have been since the 70s. They've always had big personalities. They've always had guys with checkered pasts. They've hired battleship commander head coaches. Guys like Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, now Mike Tomlin. And it's allowed them to cast a wider net to bring guys in because they know that their players can because they know that their coaches can handle it. And I think a great example of it goes back 10 years. In 2008, Mike Tomlin's in his second year. At that point, he's 35, 36 years old. I'm not sure any of us had a great idea who he was at that point. You remember his first training camp? He beat those guys up. There was complaining. The first year, they were a little below the mean for where the Steelers usually are. They come back in year two, and midseason, Rashard Mendenhall's hurt. Willie Parker starts bitching about not getting the ball. And at one point in the locker room, he said, "I think we need to get back to playing Steeler football." Now, we all knew what that was code for. We all knew what that meant. What did Mike Tomlin do publicly at the press conference? He gets up there and he's asked about it, and he said, "I don't know what Willie Parker's interpretation of Steeler football is, but when I walk into the office every day, I walk past five Lombardis, not five rushing titles. Problem solved. The Steelers wind up winning the Super Bowl." And to me, and we'll bring in Jenny and Connor now, I'm not remotely surprised with what I saw on Monday night. I'm not remotely surprised that the Steelers have been able to weather this. Like I don't think it's about single players, single incidents. I think it's about who they are. And for better or worse, they've always had a way of being able to handle these sorts of things. And they've had some, I mean, they've had some different guys in that locker room. They've had guys with bad history in that locker room before. Dealing with, over the years, James Harrison, like Martavis Bryant more recently, Joey Porter. Like, they've had weird guys. They've had some bad dudes in the locker room. They've had, and they've always been able to handle it. And it's part of the structure of who they are. Now, because the Rooneys are so stately, and because, Dan Rooney was actually an ambassador, we've always had this image of the Steelers as if they're, this regal organization, that does everything the right way. And I think some of that does apply. What you can overlook sometimes is the fact that they've always been able to absorb big personalities. They've always been able to absorb certain types of guys. And Jenny, I know you were there last week. To me, what sticks out about last night was just how that program has been able to handle the last 3 weeks, how they're built to handle it. And I think, to me, it all came through it just jumped out the screen at you. That team handled everything the last few weeks and nothing really knocked them off course.
Yeah, I mean, talking to some of the veterans in the locker room, like guard Ramon Foster, he was essentially saying, we don't necessarily seek drama out, but we've been through it before. I mean, I think it's fair to say that they almost thrive on it in a way. I mean, I agree that it's sort of a part of the fabric of the locker room, but they also know how to kind of shut it down. And, You know, I think, you know, the day I was there, Antonio Brown was addressing the tweet and the dust up with the coaches. And, you know, someone was playing a gospel song that was the saying, the storm is passing. And then he headed out to the practice field. And it's sort of in the same way that they're dealing with Bell. Like, now they're just ready to move on. Like, they said their piece. They were pissed that he wasn't there, ticked off that he wasn't there week one. The veteran said their piece. He's still not there. And they're just kind of like, yeah, we're rolling with Connor, you know?
Yeah.
Not Connor Orr.
It's always dicey to roll with Connor. I would just wonder, though, how are we so sure that the storm has passed after beating sort of a middling, strange Buccaneers team? Like, if you look at their schedule, there is no break until December. I mean, they have the Ravens, the Falcons, the Bengals, a Browns team that all of a sudden looks better, the Ravens again, the Panthers, the Jaguars, the Broncos, the Chargers. I mean, this is...
it's a gauntlet.
That is a gauntlet. And imagine if, you know, they lose two out of two to the Ravens, or they lose the next two out of the next three. I mean...
My point is, though, this isn't their first rodeo.
For sure.
Like, this is not... It's just, like, the expectation that this is, like, because this... And I understand it. I understand why people think that this is terror, because it does tear other teams apart, right? I mean, Ben's been an issue for them. Like, their quarterback has been an issue for, like, their quarterback has been, like, whiny at times. We've seen, like, obviously there's the more serious stuff further back in his past. Like, a lot of teams, like, you look at the Brady and Manning and Breeze and the way they carry themselves. That's not Ben. Like Ben carries himself like a receiver would, or a running back would. Like, he carries himself differently, and they can handle that. Like, they, it's just, it's a different organization. Like, I just don't. I think if they lose, or if they wind up stumbling a little bit, I don't think it's going to be because of all this stuff. Like, I think it'll be like, maybe the defense isn't good enough, right? Like that might be it. But I don't think, like, if they wind up at 8-8. Like, I just don't think it's going to be because of, like, the drama.
It might be because they don't have Bell.
I just wonder how long, you know, I mean, you look at, like, the long-term rub of things, and I understand that Tomlin has been great at this and handling this so far, but, you know, at what point does not having a leader at quarterback just erode completely? You know what I mean? What point does it just erode your locker room altogether? And, you know, I know that they made a big deal out of him talking to Antonio Brown and having the heart-to-heart on the Monday Night Football broadcast, but do any of us really believe that there was a stirring moment in that one-on-one conversation with the two of them? I mean, he has not been Breeze. He has not been Brady throughout his career, and I wonder at some point if that can just slowly, tear
He's
away.
14 years in.
Yeah.
Or 15 years? This is 15 years for him.
Well, I can add that the receivers went to play Topgolf last Thursday afternoon.
So everything's
fixed.
That
could have been the galvanizing moment.
That's like when the coach puts, like, a ping pong table in the locker room.
That's right. Yeah. I didn't know about Topgolf going in.
You know you're in trouble. You know you're in trouble when the culture change comes, though. The pool table, the ping pong table.
Topgolf is the first thing to go.
Right. All right. So let's get to the news. You guys know how this works. We get to five news items every week. And then, of course, we'll have Connor's fantasy update. I know everybody's looking forward
to
that.
This week is a great one. Yeah. That's all I have to say.
Stick around.
I did not like that. So we have a group text going. I actually intentionally did not read the texts that Connor and Jenny. It was only one of you guys. Like, somebody texted it to the group.
I tend to barrage.
I was
group
pissed. I was pissed because I didn't. I want to get it fresh. I want you guys to get the reaction from me. Just the organic reaction to Connor's fantasy update. So you'll get that in a little bit. News item number one, and we'll stick right there on Monday night. Ryan Fitzpatrick became the first quarterback in NFL history to throw for over 400 yards 3 weeks in a row. After the game, Bucs coach Dirk Cutter said he wanted to talk to Jameis Winston before making any decision public on who will start, with Winston coming back from suspension this week. I think this is an easy and I'm the guy who tweeted it, like, in the first half last night. It's midnight. Like, that was... I probably shouldn't be tweeting broad things like that during games, but, like, I was wrong. Like,
it was 9:35 when you tweeted that.
The point is, I was wrong, and I was at a bar, so, like, that probably played into it too. I think that the right move here, and I think this can be really be a positive for the Bucs. I think the right move here is to stick with Fitzpatrick. They're playing really well offensively. Yes, he had the three turnovers last night, so that's a concern, and, you know, they've been a little loose with the ball, but they're moving it. The offensive coordinator, the new play caller, Todd Monken, is doing, I think, a fantastic job keeping other teams off balance. They're in a rhythm right now. I don't think you mess with what you've been doing really, really well over the first 3 weeks of the season. And here's the part of it that I think, like, I think this is a way to get an answer on Jameis Winston, on where you're at with Jameis Winston. Because if he is who you thought he'd be when you drafted him first overall, he's going to react positively to this. And by positive, I don't mean like he's going to be happy about it. I don't think that, I don't think whether he's happy with it is relevant. By positive, I mean like he's going to be pissed and he's going to come off of this and he's going to say, you know what, like I'm going to show them. And he's going to prepare like he hasn't prepared before, so when his opportunity comes, he can come in and crush it. And so to me, it's like, so you're going to ride Fitz out, and if it works, you go to the playoffs. If the wheels come off, then you go to Jameis. And then you get one of two conclusions. Either you get a better Jameis, a more locked-in Jameis, a more grown-up Jameis for having gone through all of this, or you get your answer on Jameis, which is we can't go forward with him. So to me, like those three conclusions are all good organizationally. Either you make the playoffs, you get a better Jameis, or you get your final answer on Jameis on what to do with him going forward with the with that $20 million option looming for February and March.
But then when do you go back then, right? I mean, Fitzpatrick throws
four interceptions.
Yeah,
that's the hard part.
You wait until he throws six, you know.
And I don't
which
know, like that. But that's the hard part of the equation. Like, I don't even think the hard part is like deciding to stick with Fitz here. I think the hard part is like deciding where the change would come. Like what would like, do you give him a couple bad, like if Fitz has a couple bad weeks, do you give him a couple bad weeks, or do you keep him on a short leash and, you know, when things go the wrong way, you say, okay, we're going to Jameis.
And you have to make a long-term decision on Jameis, right? So that's, I mean, that's, the clock is ticking on that.
But that's what I'm saying is, like, I think that you, like, I think you find out, I think getting him back in the building, he'll be back in the building today. I think getting him back in the building, you're going to find out some stuff about him. Like, I just think you are, like, just who he is. Like, do we want to build around this guy? Like, I think you're going to find out about him.
I think the number one priority for this coaching staff is job security.
Yeah.
And right now, I mean, you know, regardless of how bad Ryan Fitzpatrick played last night, I mean, you could argue that some of the interceptions weren't his fault.
Right.
And there was a drop touchdown and a few other things that happened. But, you know, he's like, this guy got us to 2-0 and keeps throwing for 400 yards and he's in until further notice. And I just think,
I mean,
that,
well, where do you make the, what, like where would the cutoff be then? Like what would you need to, like what would cause you to go back to Jameis?
Something like completely, I think you know it when you see it. I think it's going to be completely obvious that this offense is stuck in the mud, and you know, as a coach, your job is to feel that. Your job is to have that gut instinct where you know that a change, you know, that why did the Cardinals put Josh Rosen in, you know, in the fourth quarter the other day? There was some, no matter how ill-informed, you know, there was a gut decision there, and you think that this is what your team needs. But I think right now, I mean, there's no point. I mean, I think that you saw the guys still rallying around Ryan Fitzpatrick last night. We don't know how rusty Jameis Winston is right now. You know, will he get enough repetitions in practice to even overcome 3 weeks off at this point? I don't know. So I think that, you know, the decision for me is pretty easy if I'm Dirk Cutter.
And that in itself, I think, is a sort of an indictment on Winston, right? Because if he was a guy that you were so confident in anyway, it would be a no-brainer. You know, just like it's a no-brainer for the Eagles when Wentz is healthy to put him back in.
Yep.
So the fact that you're saying, eh, we're probably better off with Fitzpatrick coming off a four interception game, which you're right, they weren't all his fault, but you know, I think that says a lot about how they feel about Winston.
He was pretty good as a rookie, and we just, like, it's like with Goff, right? Like, Goff looked awful as a rookie, so he's sort of starting from a different point, but Goff looked pretty good last year and has looked great so far this year. And that's what you're looking for, is like you're looking for steps forward. And Jameis looked like he was ready as a rookie and looked like an NFL quarterback right away. And we haven't really seen much progress since then. And so, I mean, to me, that's the biggest warning sign. All right, Connor, news item number two.
Patriots fell 26-10 to the Lions on Sunday night, marking the first time in 16 years the franchise has had double-digit losses in back-to-back weeks. Also, I think the second time in the Belichick era they've started 1-2. The first time they won the Super Bowl, and the second they lost, I think, in the AFC Championship.
If this was anyone else, we would be burying them,
yep.
Right? Like, if this was anyone else, like, they looked slow, they looked like there were points in the game where it just like it looked like they didn't have any answers offensively. The Lions stressed their communication. They had breakdowns there. I mean, this is anyone else.
They looked slow on defense.
They
for
looked
a while.
Slow.
I mean, remember the Super Bowl and you know when they played the Falcons? We were sitting there in the press box writing about how the
those were all the stories, right?
The speed on defense and the Patriots haven't been able to keep up. And so they, I mean, they've looked slow on defense for a while, right?
Yeah, and I don't like think that it's when it's not okay to be a little slow on defense is when you're not stopping the run. Like, because if you are slow on defense, you better be big and strong. And if you're not big, if you're slow on defense and you're not stopping the run, then that's a huge problem. Because now you're probably going to be getting in bad down and distance situations, and the other team's going to be able to throw all over you.
I thought what was interesting about that game was sort of the outward passive aggression between, you know, like Brady and all these people. I mean, you know, just, you know, carelessly tossing the helmet, like almost in like a I don't give an F sort of way.
There was the ball he threw, and like they like
the two balls he threw to Philip Dorsett.
There was the one that he just threw over everyone's head, and I think that I think like Al and Chris kind of said on the broadcast like it was a miscommunication. Maybe it was, but that felt like I've seen that before. Like that felt like a screw you throw, like screw like I've got no answers here. I'm putting this.
Yeah.
I'm putting this ball in section 305. Like it's just. It felt like there was like a motion in that throw.
I just kept thinking like he's probably just like, where's Brandon Cooks? Where's Brandon Cooks? Right. And he's just throwing the ball down the field. Like Philip Dorsett is 5'10". Why are we having him run these routes? You know, he's not taking the top off of defense. He's not fast enough.
Did you guys catch what he said after the game too about Dorsett?
No.
That was interesting because you don't hear Brady throw players throw teammates under the bus publicly much. But he said. Like somebody asked him to describe, and that was the Darius Slay play. And he basically said, well, you know, I put the ball up there, and Slay got eyes on it before Phil did.
Oh, yeah.
And it just kind of felt like it's not like outwardly killing your teammate, but it was sort of putting the blame at the feet. Like it was almost like their guy is better than our guy. Mm-hmm. And Slay's a good corner. Like, but it was like almost like one of those like their guy is better than my guy thing.
I think you know everyone here is not overreacting because we know their past and everything like that. And my thought is they're going to come back and they're probably going to be fine. They get Julian Edelman back and that's going to mitigate a lot of problems. I don't think as many teams maybe have the capability defensively to like you know double team Gronkowski the way that the Lions were and really throw him off his rhythm. But I wonder long term how many more of these you know slow starts, how many more of these
massive personnel changes,
you know, how many more of these can Brady take because that takes a toll on everybody emotionally. And at what point does he throw his hands up and say screw this?
They treat the first month of the season. Well, this is just their MO. They treat the first month of the season like it's an extended preseason, and they've done that. I would say for the majority of the time since the old CBA, it could be. I mean, it certainly could be. If you're Brady, it's like the mental toll.
Yeah.
I mean, and here's the other part of it, too, is like you mentioned in the Super Bowl, how like they looked, you know, in the Atlanta Super Bowl, they looked so much slower than the Falcons. Well, forever, and I probably said this last week, but forever, Brady doesn't provide margin for error. Brady is the margin for error. Like, Brady can make up for a lot of things. And so... like one of the things I've been wondering, because I don't think anybody expects Brady to, but he's too prepared. He's too, like, he's just not, like, it's hard to see him, like, falling off a cliff the way, like, Favre did in 2010, right? But what happens if Brady's just a little bit less? Like, what happens if now Brady can't be the margin for error? Like, if that happens, then I think a lot of the other things are exposed. A lot of the other, like, the speed on defense, like, a lot of the other things kind of become, like those problems would get heightened a little bit. And so it's interesting because this week they can fall behind. This is actually a critical game for them. Miami's 3-0. And if they lose this game now, all of a sudden, like you can't treat this like a preseason game. If they lose this game now, all of a sudden they're three games behind the Dolphins. And I'm not sitting here predicting the Dolphins are going to win the AFC. So I don't think you guys would either at this point, right?
No, definitely but I not. Mean, it's, you're right. It's like an early sort of early turning point, although Belichick didn't like that question. I think Terry Sullivan asked it, and he said, no one made the playoffs.
No one clinched the division on Sunday.
Yep. All right. We're going to talk a little bit more about Miami here in a second. First, you guys use NFL Game Pass, right?
All the time.
Jenny?
Yeah.
I love the condensed games because that allows you to kind of go through and see things that maybe you missed on Sunday without having to sit down and watch a three-hour game. And it's only with NFL Game Pass that you can replay every game all season. It's NFL football anytime on your time. There were so many great games this weekend. We had Pat Mahomes. We had the Buffalo upset of the Minnesota Vikings. We had the Lions upsetting the New England Patriots. Monday night game was great. With NFL Game Pass, you can replay all of them from every angle. There's the broadcast version, commercial-free. There's coaches' film, which shows the all-22 angle that the pros and coaches use. And then, like I said, there's the condensed game version that allows you to watch any game in about 45 minutes. Remember, with NFL Game Pass, it's game time anytime. Best of all, you can kick off the 2018 season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at NFL.com/MMQB10things. Game on. And game on, Jenny, with news item number 3.
The Dolphins join the Rams and Chiefs as 3 unbeaten teams left with a come-from-behind win over the Raiders on Sunday, scoring their 3 of their 4 touchdowns from more than 30 yards out.
And that was a point. That point there, I think, is interesting. Like, the big plays. I'll tell you guys why. Like, I think, like, so much of what, like, Gase and Tannenbaum and Greer tried to do. This is why, like, I think one thing that, like, I like to do with teams that start out like this, 3-0, 4-0, is, like, is there a rhyme and reason to why they're there? And I think there is rhyme and reason to why the Dolphins are there. Like, they wanted to get faster. And it's like, you look at it, they draft Gesicki, one of the fastest tight ends. They draft Jerome Baker, one of the fastest linebackers. They draft Minka Fitzpatrick, one of the fastest safeties. They draft Kalen Ballage, one of the fastest running backs. They sign Albert Wilson. What do we see? Big plays. They wanted to fix the culture. Well, they dealt with like a 7-hour game in week one, right? That was fine. They got through that good.
With halftime barbecue. Right. Or rain delay barbecue.
Right. And then, like, they come back again. And one of the problems last year was, like, the locker room was such a mess that, like, they couldn't deal with prosperity either. They dealt with, you know, beyond just not dealing with, like, the hurricane and Forrester and the stripper and all that different stuff. They didn't deal with that well. They didn't deal with prosperity well either. The Patriot game last year on Monday night, they win that when they come back six days later and play their worst game of the year against Buffalo. And so in week two, they dealt with prosperity well. And then I think here in week three, like, you see, like, the emphasis on speed. Well, the 3 touchdowns, 30 from more than 30 yards out. I mean, you guys saw the play where I think it was the jet sweep to Wilson, where Wilson and Grant were so far in front of everybody, they high-fived on their way into the end zone. Mm-hmm. So I'm at least encouraged by where the Dolphins are. I'm not, like, totally sold yet, but they're a lot better than I think most people thought.
And, you know, Xavien Howard is really, like, a exciting young player. I mean, yep. He's had 2 interceptions in the end zone in back-to-back weeks, I think. So that was a big need for their defense, with someone to, like,
no question.
You know,
the corner position was this. Are you buying?
No. I don't have a good reason either. But, you know, like, there's just some of those teams that you just look at and you're just like, I don't know. You know,
yeah.
Maybe it's Ryan Tannehill. Maybe it's just the recent past or something like that. Maybe it's my own inability to adapt.
Maybe
to change.
The Titans.
Maybe it's Jay Cutler.
Maybe it's Jay Cutler.
Maybe you're just still, you know.
You still have, like, a hangover from that?
Yeah, maybe you're just still picturing him there.
All. Yeah.
And you're feeling listless.
I think that's what it is. Just a general listness. Listlessness.
So are you blaming them for ruining Cutler then? Is that where we're going with?
No. I just meant that Connor's general expression is one of non-enthusiasm, like Jay Cutler. That is
well. So no,
over.
He connects with Cutler, but, like, yeah. Now he blames the Dolphins for screwing Cutler up last
year. That's why when, you know, he takes Kyle Shanahan's 49ers to the playoffs, potentially the Super Bowl this year, all will be right with the world.
But see, I thought, like, I don't know, the Dolphins may have done him a favor because they pushed him towards being, like, a reality TV star now.
You don't think he would have had that? Well, I guess he might have been a play-by-play
guy. But timing's everything. Timing's everything. And maybe, and, you know, the timing was right with when, like, Kristen Cavallari, like, opened that store. So the reality TV show. Do you guys watch?
I do, yeah. I've learned a lot about Jay Cutler on and off the field from that show.
That show is pretty good. I think after watching that show, I wish he was in the booth now.
Totally, 100%.
I wish he was in the booth. Like, if I'm Fox or I'm CBS, I am chomping at the bit to get him upstairs.
If I'm ESPN, I'm making that trade tomorrow on Monday Night Football and getting Jay Cutler in the booth. Imagine just like the hilarity, like the demilitarization of the language, and just like some guy who just doesn't care.
I think Cutler and Witten could work well together too. Like, or maybe you go Cutler Booger.
Yeah, that's the combo.
Tessitore.
We should propose it. I think we just did.
But I think like with Cutler, you need a straight man. Like the guy who's trying to like Witten's like the guy who, like, I'm biased. I cover Jason and I think he's a good dude. He's got a ways to go as a broadcaster. But I think like Cutler could be good for Witten because I think he would call Witten out on certain things. Like if Witten was trying too hard on X, Y, or Z, like Cutler would not be afraid to step in there and call him out. And
tell him that he probably shouldn't refer to penalties as left wing on the Monday Night Football broadcast.
I think the bottom line is that, like, I think we can all agree that Jay Cutler would solve any broadcast booth problems.
Poor Dolphins. This is their moment, and we're here talking about Jay Cutler.
They're 3-0, and we are.
Good for you guys, Dolphins. Good for you.
All right,
Enjoy this.
We'll move on now.
Have a good time.
We'll move on now to another quarterback news item number 4. Patrick Mahomes threw for 3 more touchdowns on Sunday as the Chiefs beat the Niners at home. That puts Mahomes' total for the season at 13, which is the most ever for a quarterback through 3 weeks. He's a blast to watch. Like, I mean, like that's the first thing that kind of pops into my mind when you start talking about him. There's like a level of excitement with his, and I hope this happens with Mayfield too. I think there's a chance that it does. Mm-hmm. Like where every week, you're sort of excited to watch him play. I think it was like that with Wentz in 2016, with Robert Griffin in 2012. Like, we've seen this with young quarterbacks before, and it kind of feels like that. Like with Mahomes, he's so fun to watch this. Like every week, it's like the Chiefs are now one of the games that you're circling.
Go ahead, Connor.
I was just going to say he's on pace for 70 touchdowns. And the first 3 weeks, I was like, well,
I think that knocks him off the pace a little bit. Like, because he was on pace for 80, I think, last week, right?
Yeah. But at first, we were like, yeah, there's no way that's going to happen. And now I'm like, if he threw 60 touchdown passes this year, I wouldn't be totally blown away.
Right.
Like you said, there's going to be a regression at some point. But what if his regression is not what everybody else is?
So here's So here's the weird thing. Like, so we talked about, I know we talked last week about how, like, what's so impressive about what he's done is so much of it's on schedule, right? Like, so much of it's not the wild Brett Favre stuff, right? And so he made a play that was like a Favre play in the touchdown pass to Chris Connolly in the corner of the end zone, where he goes left, reverses field, goes right, and then like sidearms it in there. And, you know, I talked to Connolly about it after the game. And I think what's interesting about him, like that regression that we're expecting, that's going to the teams are going to throw some different stuff at him, and certainly like it's going to be hard. It's going to get harder for him like in the next few weeks, right? Like, because you know, start to draw a book on him. It's like, okay, like this is what he does well. Let's make him play left-handed, so to speak. But like, I wonder if that like kind of pushes him. Like now, all of a sudden, okay, like that happens, then he just turns into the playground guy, and it's almost like just as bad for the defense. I don't know. It's just, I'm not fully there like with that idea yet, but I there's part of me that wonders if like there's like this element to his game where it's like if you knock him off schedule a little bit, he almost becomes more dangerous.
Because then he'd do those no look passes in college where he would just kind of fling it without looking.
Yeah.
I mean, so he sort of did one of those in the week 17 start last year too. So I mean, he's certainly, I agree, he's not afraid when things break down. Conversely, to his remarkable stats is the fact that the defense is on pace to give up nearly 500 points this season.
Yep.
So that will be something, you know.
And I don't know, I don't know how fixable that is. Like, they lost Marcus Peters. Derek Johnson's gone now. And now, not that Johnson was the player he was 5 years ago, but that's still a guy who'd been in the middle of their defense for a long time. Justin Houston's a year older. Like, I think that they needed a rebuild on defense. And I think it's becoming clear that they're definitely not there yet.
Yeah, I agree. They're missing some pieces. I think it's time for Bob Sutton to pull out Sun Tzu.
Yes.
Death Ground.
It all comes back to
some principles from the Art of War.
It all comes back to the Jets.
It always does, Connor. It always does.
All right, Connor, news item number 5.
The Vikings, a 17-point favorite coming into the weekend, fell to the winless Bills at home, putting Minnesota at 1-1. 1-1 going into Thursday night's game against the 3-0 Rams. I thought that, you know, Josh Allen looked good. I mean, that was also a game plan that really tailored to a rookie quarterback in his second game. A lot of short passes, a lot of screens, but in a way that were, you know, they were executed. And in a lot of ways, I just thought it was Minnesota sort of getting flattened. This was, you know, you hate to revert to that cliche where it's a trap game, but they were just getting bowled over. They weren't making tackles. They were being kind of out manhandled by Buffalo.
Yeah, and I think that this is a real gut check for them now too, because now they got to come back 3 days later. They dealt with the Everson Griffin thing over the weekend, which is bizarre, and that's, I mean, a top five guy on their team, like one of the five or six best players,
and we'll
on
still
team.
Probably be dealing with for, I mean, that's not,
yeah,
something
that's not
like,
going
oh,
away
that happened,
that's
you
not
know,
that's not going
yeah.
away, right? Like, so like you sort of like, I think we'll find out something about who the Vikings are, like, because like through a good part of last year they were sort of riding the wave, and then it all they went like careening into a brick wall in the NFC Championship game, getting blown out the way that they did. And now they're dealing with some trouble early. You know, there's obviously they let a winnable game turn into a tie in Green Bay, right? Like I think it's fair to say that was a very winnable game in Green Bay, and that becomes a tie. And now they come off of that, they lay an egg, and they're going to be playing a really hot Rams team. Like, I think we're going to find out a little bit about them this week.
I think that, you know, the Griffin thing may have been a really big, you know, mental hurdle for,
yeah.
They looked like something was off, right? And, you know, people were asking, oh, did they overlook the Bills? And Zimmer, you know, no, we didn't overlook the Bills. But, you know, I think if you have a player that's having a tough time in a situation like that, not only is he not on the field, you have teammates saying what's going on, they're worried for him. I mean, that's the kind of thing that can make a team sort of look off, and that's certainly what they did. They really looked off.
In a close locker room too. I mean, sometimes that can happen where, you know, you're just sort of not comfortable casting someone away like that, but that defense has kind of been notoriously tight under Zimmer.
Well, and
too,
if everybody's whispering about, like, if it's 9:10 a.m. and everybody's whispering, like, what happened? You know, like, it could, like I think it could, like, throw your focus off in warm-ups and that sort of thing. So maybe you're not locked in the way you need to be. But I think that once you go through that, like, once you've been through that, then, like, you go into the next, like, you have to be locked. Like, that's why I'm saying I think, like, we find out something about them now. Because, okay, in the immediate aftermath, like, the team probably didn't handle that as well as they could have. Now we'll find out where they're at. Now, because you can't let it affect you 3 or 4 days later. Like, that's just the way the league is. Things happen, and we've seen strange things happen before. And, like, I think we'll find out something about him in 3 days.
A lot about Kirk Cousins, too.
Or by the time this goes up, no, it's actually 2 days. Like, my math is horrible. 2 days from today, and then by the time all you out there listen to it,
tomorrow.
It'll be tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
The lesson here is just to listen to it as soon as it hits your phone. Like, drop everything.
That's right.
Yeah, you know,
that's right.
That's the plan.
Well, and that's why we're giving everybody what they want, which is your fantasy update.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh, so we're on the board. We won our first game, and I just can't say how proud it is as a leader of men to see when a culture change finally takes hold and the rubber meets the road. We eked one out on James Conner's game sealing last carry.
Wow.
Last night.
That's a gut punch for your opponent.
Definitely got the GM off my back a little bit. Right before that, because we were down a point, my wife was questioning all of my personnel decisions, including, you know, mentioning my point total, which is much lower than everybody else relative to the league. And she's saying, I don't think this is bad luck. I think this is bad drafting. And so we were confronting a lot of things.
Internal strife,
but James Conner makes that run. I jump off the couch and I celebrate so loudly that it stirs the dog, who freaks out and wakes up the baby. So short-lived celebration last night, but definitely still feeling good this morning despite the lack of sleep.
There was a tense moment because, you know, there was a negative rush,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Conner was tackled a few yards behind the line of scrimmage. And so those who were following along, which included me, because I was interested, I'm in the same league, right? So you've got to keep tabs on what's going on around the league.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
And so I thought, is that going to knock it down a point? You know, it was really
on the edge.
I'm going
to go back
here
and, like, watch the end of the game.
Really on the edge here. So then after that, there was the game-sealing run, and then I refreshed the score, and Connor's team was up by a single point.
Is there any fallout from your celebration?
Yeah, I'm sure that not only, I mean, she's still making suggestions, by the way. We're definitely churning the waiver wire again this week. Not happy with my choice to go with three quarterbacks on the roster. She thought that was an ineffective use of space, especially since we were unable to sub out Leonard Fournette at the last minute this weekend. So
Big zero.
Yeah, big zero. So I would say that the baby waking up definitely did not help me get out of the weeds. But, you know, winners win and gamers game. And so that's kind of what I'm bouncing on.
I'll tell you what, my team took one on the chin this week after a really hot start the first 2 weeks. And, yeah, it's gut check time. Like, Joe Mixon's injury really hurt us. Josh Gordon still not ready to go. Dan Bailey, I thought I looked like I forgot to bench him, forgot to cut him after the Cowboys cut him, and that actually worked out for me because it looked to everybody else in my league like wow, that was pretty sharp of him. Like, he just held on to Dan Bailey, took the hit for a week and now he's going to have a really good kicker. Well, Bailey laid a goose egg for me too. So, this is going to be a test of the chemistry of a team that's got on it. DeSean Jackson, Cam Newton, Stephon Diggs, Josh Gordon, Joe Mixon, Robbie Anderson. It's a colorful bunch.
To put a bow on this, this is sort of your Mike Tomlin moment. You've tried to make something out of these loose cannon personalities.
Right.
Can you hold it together?
There's some real edge in that locker room, and we built it to create good tension. Does it become bad tension? We'll find out this week.
A lot about Breer this week. Find out a lot about Albert.
The takeaway really is that it's hard to get a W in this league. So congratulations, Connor. Congratulations.
What was it? What was the worst line? They pay the other.
They get paid too.
They get paid too. Yeah. That was my least favorite player cliche ever. All right.
All right, guys. All right, we'll jump right into the six pack now. You guys know how this works. Every Tuesday, I put the call out for questions on Twitter. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like on Twitter. You also get your question answered here. We're going to start question number one. This is from Tom. That's at TC Go Hawks. Why can't you play football anymore in the NFL? Now, I know what you're getting at, Tom, which is the rule that actually has caused more of a problem than anything else, which I don't think many people would have predicted because it didn't get nearly as much attention in the offseason. That's the body weight rule. Everybody thought it'd be the helmet rule. It has become the body weight rule. And I'll tell you why. Because the NFL is far too reactionary. And too often, we see the NFL act with rabbit ears and react to single events. And to me, the body weight rule, the way that quarterback hits are being legislated right now is 100% affected by the hit that Anthony Barr put on Aaron Rodgers last year. And it's made it very, very difficult on defensive players because you can't go high, you can't go low, and now you've got to be conscious when you're going at someone's midsection that if you take them off their feet, that's going to be a problem. And so I don't think the rule was necessary. I don't think there was any, I don't think that an adjustment was needed to the way they're legislating hits on quarterbacks. And unfortunately, this is done completely in reaction to what we saw happen to Aaron Rodgers last year. The same way they put in the Brady rule and the Carson Palmer rule all those years ago, about going low on quarterbacks. I believe it first went in after Palmer got hurt in 2005 and then got adjusted when Brady got hurt in 2008. We're seeing this as a reaction to a single event, and I'm with you. I don't think it's right. I think that they need to do something to adjust it. I think it's causing a problem week to week now in the NFL. It's not good from a PR standpoint, and it is a direct result of the NFL being way too reactionary when it comes to single events. Question number two is from Dwayne Saffel. That's at I Maiden Fan. Why is Jason Garrett? I'm assuming your question is, why is Jason Garrett? I guess, why is Jason Garrett maybe not talked about more as far as being coaches on the hot seat? Why is Jason Garrett still in Dallas? And I'll tell you what, I think that he's done a good job of building a program there. Most of the players that I've interacted with, that they're on board with the way Jason does things. I don't think that it's a bad team right now. I think the defense is really good. I think the running game still got potential to get good. They've got to get a lot better in the passing game. But I'll tell you one reason why Jason Garrett is not, it may not be in as much trouble as some people might think. Jason Garrett, separate from other coaches who've been in Dallas, I think is seen by Jerry Jones as a creation of Jerry Jones. He was there as a player. He was allowed into coaching meetings when he was still playing. Jerry took a chance on him in hiring him as the offensive coordinator from Miami. He made that hire before he hired Wade Phillips as head coach. And, you know, then 3 years later, he went through with the final piece of the plan, turning to Jason Garrett as his head coach when he fired Wade Phillips in midseason. And then after the year, he affirmed it by hiring him as the full-time head coach. And so I think in so many ways, Jason Garrett, at least the way Jerry sees it, is a creation of Jerry. And that means, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way towards anybody, but that means that firing Jason wouldn't just be Jason's failure, it would be Jerry's failure. And so I think that's why Jason has gotten a lot of rope. I think he's built a good program there. There are some questions about the way the roster was constructed this year, but they've gotten a lot younger. And I'm not ruling out the idea that they turned the corner here and we're not asking these questions in 2 months, regardless of everything that I just outlined. Question number three, this is from the post office at the_post_office. Is the Browns trading Gordon a case of addition by subtraction for Cleveland? I'm going to say no, because the way the Browns handled Josh Gordon over the course of the last 4 or 5 months was anything he gives us is a bonus. And so the way they constructed their offense, it was built around guys like Antonio Callaway and Jarvis Landry and Hollywood Higgins and David Njoku. They weren't building the offense with the idea that Josh Gordon was going to be kind of the king on the chessboard. That was never the plan. And I think it was smart to do that. And the reason they did it was because they looked at Gordon as being a player that couldn't be counted on. And in the end, you take him out of the equation, and I don't think it affects much. And so I think the Browns were smart in the way that they handled Josh Gordon. They certainly did everything they can to try to get him back on track and get him where he needed to be. He proved himself to be undependable, and so they get rid of him. And I think it's a credit to Hugh Jackson, Todd Haley, and that staff that they built the team in a way where taking Gordon out of the equation didn't really affect anything much. Question number four from Sam Bart. That's at SamBart89. Which coach's seat is getting the warmest at the moment? And here's what's interesting about that question. I get that question a bunch. I don't know if there is one. Like, I don't know if there's an obvious place where you can look for a coach who's in deep trouble right now. Look at the AFC East. The Bills are 1-2. McDermott's fine. This is a rebuilding year for them. Todd Bowles in New York, they're 1-2. There's a possibility that there could be a change coming. Hugh Jackson in Cleveland, we go over to the AFC North. I mean, if things go off the rails, if Baker doesn't play well, I certainly think there could be a change there, but right now they look pretty stable. I don't think anything's going to happen with the Steelers. The Texans, they just kind of rebooted the program around Bill O'Brien, so I'd be surprised if there was a change there. Frank Reich, they're 1-2 in Indianapolis, but this is his first year. Raiders are 0-3. Gruden's in his first year. Chargers are 1-2. I still think Anthony Lynn gets that thing turned around. Giants first year coach, we just explained Dallas. Lions 1-2 first year coach. Falcons 1-2. Quinn was in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. Cardinals 0-3 first year coach. I don't know that there's an obvious one out there, and so it's hard for me to look at it and say that anyone is on the hot seat right now. So I know that sounds like I'm dodging the question, but I legitimately look across the league and I don't think there's one that sticks out. Question number five from Danny, that's at BigLope85. Do you think San Francisco actually trades for a quarterback? The answer to that question is no. Two reasons why. One, they really legitimately do like C.J. Beathard. If you want to go back to the 2017 draft, I know that the staff saw some similarities in Beathard at Iowa and Cousins at Michigan State. And obviously, Kyle Shanahan thinks a lot of Kirk Cousins, so those similarities are meaningful in that building. Not saying he's going to become Cousins, but just that when they, coming out and assessing the college player as college players, there were some parallels there. The second piece of this, they need those draft picks. I mean, I think coming into the year, everybody got excited about the 5-0 finish, and I understand why. And they do have some exciting young players. Jimmy Garoppolo obviously isn't going to be playing, but he's one of them. You know, Mike McGlinchey, I think, is going to be a building block at right tackle and maybe eventually left tackle. On defense, Reuben Foster, I think, is going to be electric. Weatherspoon hasn't played as well at corner as they had wanted or expected, but, he's another piece that could be a big one going forward. But they're still, I'd say, a draft or two away from being where they need to be. And so they value those picks. And so I'd be surprised. I think they will and they're, you know, working out quarterbacks, I think they will sign a quarterback, and they may have, and it may have already happened by the time you listen to this. I don't think they're going to trade for one, though. Question number six, last one of the week, from Andrew Fisher at Colts Fisher. Is this actually the beginning of the end for New England, or is it just something that happens every September? Something about this iteration seems deeper than X's and O's. Yeah, you know, last year I felt like they had a talent issue on defense, and it came up again in the Super Bowl, but they got to the Super Bowl. And so I have a hard time sitting here and saying in week three that or going into week four that anything in that building isn't fixable. I think the talent issue on defense is still there. I'm not sure that that's fixable, but they showed last year that they had a talent issue on defense and it was manageable. And I think this one could be manageable. I don't think the team's unfixable. I think we're going to find out a lot about them this week, because you can screw around and treat the first month of the season as the preseason. Well, now you're two games behind the Dolphins, and falling three games behind in the division, I think, would be a stunner. The idea that the Dolphins could come in there at 3-0 and win in Foxborough with that much on the line, I think most people would be surprised to see that result. And so if that happens, I promise you, when we come back next week, and our Dolphin fan producer Harry's over here, I promise you when we come back this week that I will have a little bit of an adjustment to the way that we're talking about the New England Patriots. Appreciate you guys coming out. As always, your feedback is valued here. We want to make this your podcast. So anything you got for me or Jenny or Connor, how we can do this better, the format, what you guys want to hear more of, you guys can bring it to me at my Twitter page at Albert Breer, my Facebook page at Albert R. Breer, my Instagram at Albert_Breer, or you can leave us a review and a rating on iTunes. That helps us with the algorithm. I think Harry explained that to me last week. That helps us with the algorithm as far as where we're at on the rankings and all of that. And always, always, always remember to listen to all the MMQB podcasts. We've got four of them now, I believe, all under one feed, the gambling podcast. We've got Andy Benoit breaking it down from an X's and O's standpoint with Gary Grambling twice a week. And of course, you got this podcast, the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, with Jenny and Connor alongside. You can get us on Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.